Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, January 27th, 2017. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
Hey, it's going good. Nice to be here again.
It's nice to have you. And I decided I wanted to do a one-on-one show today because of the topics that I've picked for us. I want to make sure that we have a time to have the time to really dive in. So I just wanted to have you, especially because I know you have stuff to say about both these topics.
Yeah, this is an agenda that's fine-tuned for John.
That's right. Every now and then, I will craft a show with one person in mind. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron, which is pretty awesome.
Yay.
Yeah. So there you go. Little foreshadowing. We'll talk about them soon. So anyhow, let's just hop into what I wanted you on the show for. And the first thing is solar power and clean energy economies in the United States. And you think that Apple is kind of jump-starting this whole movement.
Yeah, from time to time, we have written about Apple and solar power plants sporadically. Then I saw another one yesterday about another Apple-funded solar power plant in Nevada. Nevada Energy made an announcement, press release, this is a 200-megawatt solar power plant. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I got really curious. I started thinking, well, we've heard a lot about Apple and solar power, but there hasn't been any coherence to it. And I thought, how many solar power plants does Apple have? How big are they? How big are typical solar power plants in comparison to coal and nuclear power plants? And all of a sudden, the physicist in me started asking all these questions.
Of course.
And I started doing some research on the internet, and I found a lot of information, but nobody had brought it all together and compared the capacities of a solar power plant to coal and gas and nuclear. And so I started reading and reading and learning and collecting information, and pretty soon I had an article. So the first thing I talked about was how big is a typical solar power plant. Apple's built plants from ranging from 10 to, in the planning stages, 280 megawatts in California. There's one I just mentioned in Reno that's planned to be 200 megawatts, and I thought, well,
is that big compared to other solar plants?
It turns out not to be. Solar energy farms require a lot of acreage, and that spreads them out quite a bit. And so you have to have a lot of land, and Nevada is a really good place for that. So is Arizona. Mm-hmm. In crowded metro areas, you don't have that much acreage to spread out. Our power company here just recently built a little one, 10 megawatts or 13. So I started looking into what a typical coal-powered power plant is. And there are 572 operational coal plants in the U.S., and the average capacity is 547 megawatts. So this is about twice as big as the biggest solar power plant that I know of, which is 280.
Okay.
And that's the California Flat Solar Project, which you wrote about back in 2014, and I linked to that article.
Oh, good times.
And then I started looking at the nuclear power plants, and nuclear power plants are based on a plant which may have one or more reactors. Mm-hmm. Typically, the plants have one reactor, and there's one in Nebraska, Fort Calhoun, that's 479 megawatts, which is about the same size as the average, maybe a little smaller than the average coal plant. But there's a Palo Verde plant in Arizona that has three reactors, mm-hmm, of pretty substantial capacity for each one, and the aggregate is almost 4 gigawatts.
Wow.
3,900 megawatts. So that was interesting to me. And then there's another technology that I ran across I just couldn't help writing about, that I've told you guys about before, and that's Crescent Dunes at Tonopah, Nevada, which is...
That's the salt, the molten salt place, right?
That's heliostats, which are mirrors that can be pointed, which focus on a tower, right, and turn salt to molten salt. And that molten salt can be stored for days generates steam and electricity even when it's dark. So that plant's 110 megawatts. And then I started asking myself, well, how many megawatts does it take to power so many homes? It turns out that the average power consumption over a year, day and night, for a household is about 1.23 kilowatts. You know, a hairdryer uses that much, but you don't run it continuously. And so the average is about 1.23 kilowatts. So if you have a megawatt plant, you can power about 850 homes in the daytime if it's solar.
So the power that Apple's generating with these plants, this is, I'm guessing, because I'm not doing any math at all, because that's just crazy talk. I'm guessing that Apple is producing at least enough electricity with its solar farms to power its own facilities.
Yes.
And maybe a little left over?
Plenty to spare to sell. Plenty left over. Yeah, I think the one California Flat Solar Project is being funded by Apple to the tune of about $850 million. And Apple will use a lot of that. But for example, 50 megawatts can power 40,000 homes. So 500 megawatts could power 400,000 homes. And so this California Flats is probably going to be providing power to the region as well as Apple. These other smaller ones, like the ones in Maiden, North Carolina, there's a couple there, 12 megawatts. And nearby Claremont, 17 megawatts. These are just about enough for Apple's data centers. So but the thing is, I made a list of all the ones I could find, and there's eight that Apple is either building by itself for its own data centers, or it's building in concert with local energy companies and then licensed to sell the excess. So that's, if you add them all up from what's planned and my list, it comes to about 500 megawatts. But I found on Apple's energy and climate change page that on the drawing boards, they have 4 gigawatts of capacity planned, so which is about eight times the current on the books systems. So Apple has big plans for the future for solar power, not only to power its own facilities and data centers, but also to actually sell and make some money.
So you're thinking that what Apple's doing right now is going to be an incentive for other big companies to do the same.
Oh yeah. They're setting the stage. They're inspiring the rest of the industry. They're developing the technology. They're being an energy, clean energy leader, setting the example. And the other thing I found out in the research is that Apple's also working with China, and they're building a 200 megawatt solar farm in China, and they've got plenty more sites planned. Over the next 2 years, they're going to install 400 megawatts of solar power for its iPhone production facility in Jiangsu, China. Mm-hmm. So they're partnering with China quite a bit on building these facilities. And China recognizes, I think, the value of that because they have their own environmental problems. And clean energy for commercial use is important. So Apple's having an influence. I'm sure that not only did Tim Cook talk to President Trump about manufacturing in the U.S., but he also probably talked to him about the initiatives that they have with China and the U.S. in solar power. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big investment, and it's Apple's being a real leader in that area. And I didn't appreciate the scope of what Apple was doing in solar power until I started making a list of all the sites and sort of reading their page and what their initiatives are in the U.S. and China, and then comparing that to, you know, typical coal-fired facilities, to put it all in perspective. So that was a fun article to write. That was yesterday. It was called Apple Solar Power Plants Igniting U.S. Clean Energy Economy. I just had so much fun with the math and the physics and the research. It was cool.
All right. And I had no idea that Apple's clean energy efforts were so vast. So that's actually really cool. And I'm glad to see Apple acting as an example for other corporations. And now I'm curious to see which companies step up and follow Apple's lead.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah. All right. Well,
yeah, well, it could be regionally related too, because, you know, solar power works well in the south and west. It doesn't work so well in the north and the northeast.
Well, you need big, flat, empty spaces, and you need lots of sun.
Nevada, Arizona, California, those are the leaders. New Mexico. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on this.
Yes.
And so here's a very awkward transition into the sponsor. Wow, we all need power for our bodies, just like Apple needs power for its business. See, told you.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually.
Oh, smooth. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
I like it.
So since we all need to power our bodies, why not do it with food that tastes really good and is easy to prepare, and where you can get variety without having to hurt your brain cells? And that's what Blue Apron does. They've come up with all these great recipes where they then go and find all the fresh ingredients you need, the produce, the seasonings. If there's meat or fish or poultry, they find quality ingredients there too. And then they package all of this up, ship it to you really fast so that you can have several meals that you can prepare and eat at your leisure. And it's really good food. And like I said, it's easy to prepare. I love that they have a lot of variety. And when you go and pick the meals or see what the meals are for the week, if you don't like what's there, they have other options. So you can pick different things. And as an example, I really like genuinely can't eat broccoli. It's not I don't want to eat it thing. It's like, nope, goes in my mouth and then things just get ugly. So I just avoid broccoli. One of the Blue Apron dinners had broccoli as a main thing in it. Wasn't going to eat that. So I just selected something else. Done. And it took seconds to pick something that I would enjoy. And I love that they have that flexibility, because you can pick from all these different things, and odds are there are going to be several things that you look at and think, yeah, I'd like to try that. And you should get to try that. And here's how you can. So first off, they've made their meals affordable. So they break down to like $10 per person per meal. And what they want is for you to be able to try that without having to spend quite so much money. So they have a deal for all of you, dear listeners, where you can get your first three meals off of an order for free. So you get a nice discount. And the way you do that is by going to their special website just for us. And that's blueapron.com/TDO. blueapron.com/TDO. Pick out the meal package you want. First three meals on that package are free for you. Also, you don't pay shipping, which is really awesome. And it's pretty cool when the package shows up. It was just this nice size box, and I pick it up and was immediately surprised because it was much heavier than I was expecting, which is kind of crazy because I know what a bag of full of groceries weighs. And, you know, it's like that. I picked up this box loaded with all these fresh groceries delivered right to my door. And anyhow, it's just right there on your doorstep. And you get these meals with these easy-to-follow recipes, and it's really cool. It's a lot of fun, and it tastes good. So you should give it a shot. blueapron.com/TDO. Thank you, Blue Apron, for being our sponsor. Okay. John, the other thing that I wanted to talk about with you today, and I figured this would get you kind of excited, are you familiar with the partnership on AI?
Yes, I am. I think I've actually written about it when it first formed.
Yes, that sounds very familiar. All right. Well, so they first formed, it was what, like last fall, something like that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, today they officially announced their initial board of trustees. And Apple is on that board. So the person from Apple that's on the board is Tom Gruber. And if the name sounds familiar but you can't place it, it's probably because you remember him from a few years ago when his company, which was called Siri, launched this product that lets you talk to your iPhone and it would respond and do queries and things like that for you. That's the same Siri that Apple eventually bought and integrated into iOS and now macOS. So Tom Gruber's the guy that co-founded the company and helped develop that technology. And he's been involved in AI for quite a while and has a very deep interest in it. And now he's an Apple employee who's on the board of trustees for the partnership on AI. Other companies that are on the board, there's, let's see, Microsoft, IBM, I'm drawing a blank, Facebook, the DeepMind project from Google, Amazon, and I think those are all the companies. There's also OpenAI, the ACLU, the MacArthur Foundation, and a couple other organizations.
Excellent.
That are on the Excellent. Board as well. So, John, you've talked about how Apple has been changing with the way they're kind of opening up as far as AI research goes.
Yeah, this is an important one. Just to put it into perspective, when I was working at Apple, Apple was very much into science and supporting the science community. So they attended all these conferences, biology conferences, supercomputing, SIGGRAPH, and so on. Mm-hmm. And then by and by, Apple kind of withdrew from these conferences. I think it was a bit of concern about the people they send to conferences being surrounded by people and talking too much. Mm-hmm. and also having to, you know, compete and perform on turf that they were expected to be performing on, and maybe didn't have that particular approach or angle, or maybe their product wasn't ready, or they feared that they were going to spill too much about what they're secret plans were, and so on. So Apple withdrew from conferences, the storage conferences and networking conferences and graphics conferences like SIGGRAPH, and of course they've never been at CES. They play on their own grounds and communicate with their customers through their stores and in their own ways. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, this is a new era, and this is something that Apple can't really responsibly withdraw from and develop artificial intelligence agents that are going to interact with humans on a secret level. It's not socially and ethically responsible to, I don't think, to develop these agents which are going to interact with human beings. And I've written, as the listeners know and the readers, I've written extensively about the responsibility of AI agents calling you on the phone, perhaps as telephone cold calls to sell you something, or intelligent agents working in customer support, or robots acting irresponsibly in family service. All of this depends on the ethics and the social responsibility of these agents that we're going to be talking to and interacting with and trusting in many ways, sometimes trusting with our lives, as in the case of autonomous cars. Mm-hmm. And it's been recognized by these other companies that there's a genuine need for an open, academic, shared, socially responsible, forward-looking, moral approach to these intelligent agents. And so we have the partnership on AI, and the right companies are members: Amazon, IBM, Microsoft. And as Apple held out, I thought, well, this is too bad. This is something that this is Apple being its Apple again in its old ways. And it makes me very pleased to hear that Apple has recognized. And I'm sure this is something from Tim Cook, because he's a very socially responsible person and has been a leader in social responsibility and civil rights and as we just talked about, clean energy in the first segment. So I'm guessing that finally it came up on Tim Cook's radar, and he says, yeah, we have to join these other people and develop our AI agents in a social way and start publishing papers so that we can attract good talent and be a responsible social outward member of the community working with everybody else to make sure things are done right. And the ACLU is in there to also represent the rights of citizens, mm-hmm. as companies often use technology for their own purposes in some ways that benefit customers, but in some ways often have unintended consequences of damaging customers. And the ACLUs, I'm glad to see them there to make sure that companies don't go overboard in their fervor to cash in on the AI agent's ability to manipulate, control human beings that they're supposed to serve. So This is a very good thing for Apple. Congratulations, Apple. Thank you. And good luck going forward.
I agree. I think this is a really smart move on Apple's part, and I'm glad to see them participating in this organization. So we're out of time, but I'm going to ask you a question anyhow, because I'm sure this is something that a lot of our listeners are wondering right now. Since Apple has joined the board for the partnership on AI, do you think this is an indication that they're really stepping up their AI game, and Siri will finally catch up with products like the Amazon Echo and its Alexa interface, or maybe even leapfrog the competition?
Well, what comes to mind was the article I read by Mark Andreessen a few months ago, where he revealed that Alexa from Amazon and the Echo and Dot product were the result of 5 years of work by 1,200 engineers at Amazon, and caught Apple completely by surprise. Mm-hmm. And while Stephen Levy wrote a very revealing Apple quasi-sponsored article last fall about Apple's efforts with Siri and the people they've hired and what they're working on, it seems on the surface, from what I've read, that companies like Amazon and Google have surged ahead and have perhaps put some pressure on Apple, and maybe Apple's feeling that of a combination of social responsibility plus the need, because this technology is so sophisticated and so complex, to start interacting with other companies. I'm sure there's not too much sharing of proprietary secret information, but just being a member, just talking, just being part of the fraternity of organizations and companies that are working on this is going to help Apple be more in touch with what's going on, both socially and a little bit technically. So I think there's multiple reasons why Apple did this. I don't see companies bending over backwards to share their secrets, but in the process of being developing standards for interactions with humans, all companies will float their technical boats together.
All right. Well, on that, we really are out of time. So, John, thank you for joining me today. I'm so glad that you're here.
This was fun. You're very welcome.
Yeah. And Blue Apron, thank you for being our sponsor all week long. Head over to their website, blueapron.com/TDO, and pick up an order for yourself. Your first three meals will be free, and you're not going to pay shipping, which is pretty cool, and their food is really good. And listeners, thank you for joining us. I'll see you again next week.